Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to speak with us about the recent Musings article. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hi, Jen.
A mouthful there. So first, I just, you know, I'm sure everyone joins me in saying that the Musings article are such a gift in practice. And I know for me, there's always just that, you know, as we always say, we're always saying the same thing over and over in different ways, but it's just that fresh window in that feels like it blows a beautiful, you know, new look on something. So just a deep gusto for that process that we get to have the gift of month after month.
Well, it's a gift for me too, Jen, to be able to write them. So
It's the same
process to be able to be here. It's what I think Sherry talks about in writing responses to email classes, or facilitators talk about sitting on the cushions. It just opens up the space to be present to life and to let life talk to you, right?
Yes.
It's a process of revelation, actually.
Yes, and as you say that, I think, you know, it's that place where so often we get talked out of, quote, our own practice, or, you know, somehow, you know, that takes last priority. I'm not going to make space to just sit down and open, but if I have to write an article, I will. And so it's such a gift to be sort of required, if you will, to to make space for that process. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always an interesting process to see what gets written. I mean, it always is the case that life has something to say.
Yeah, exactly. What gets written? Not what I write, but what gets written.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell us about this current article.
Well, it sort of came out of a bunch of things that we were looking at, especially in the Socratic email class where that place where we're asked to bring our process to guidance produces a certain kind of response, which leads to the question of, are we actually looking at our process, or have we stopped looking at our process? And so as we were looking at some of the responses of the Socratic email class, for example, the recent one we did, there was this might be an occasion for a Nan-esque kind of intervention to ask people to pause and look further. So it was just, we get to these points in practice where it feels like it's worth asking that question. I mean, we had the occasion of going beyond feeling bad, right? That in 2013, we decided as a Sangha to stop feeling bad, because a pattern had started where, even though the practice is to go beyond self-hate, what people were practicing was reporting on self-hate, which kept the attention on the exact process that we were trying to transcend.
So we
had to bring conscious awareness to how we were practicing the teaching, because it wasn't taking us beyond suffering.
So it was a really important step, because at that point, realizing, gosh, people are mired in self-hate, one thing, then begin to see the self-hate, and to just continue to report on it and report on it and report on it keeps us in relationship with it. So, okay, let's stop feeling bad. You know, let's decide as a Sangha we're going to stop feeling bad. Really important step, but it's not the end. It's not. It doesn't end there.
That's right. There's an evolution of practice, of the practice of awareness, right? We come to practice, we don't know about the voices, and we don't know about the self-hate, and so we start to bring attention to egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate as a process, because in doing that, we have the ability to disidentify from it. But the point of bringing awareness to egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, is to disidentify from it, not to keep attention on it. I mean, before giving up feeling bad, we gave up reporting on the voices for the very same reason, right?
Yeah.
We talk about that in the resistance book about how if we talk about what the voices are saying and doing, it's the focus of our attention is on having a garden and only focusing on the weeds. Mm-hmm. And my frustration with weeding and how the weeds, you know, what different shades of color and shape the weeds are. Yes, we're paying attention to it, but then we lose the awareness that we're in a garden, and there's so much more to enjoy in a garden than just weeding. Yeah. Even though you could enjoy weeding, right? But the process is enjoyment.
Right. Well, it's so fun as you're talking, Ashwini, because you're really kind of, well, you use the word evolution. You're really laying out the evolution of practice. And that what I'm seeing as you're talking is that with each kind of big insight that's offered to the whole Sangha, and then and all of Sangha brings their sincerity and their willingness, and we practice that as a group, then conditioning is going to do what it needs to do to continue to survive, right? It's like
that's
a bacteria or something, right, that's going to morph. And so then it does the next thing, and then, you know, the guide and the guides of the practice will often begin to see where it's gone to hide. And then the next thing comes along to point directly back at where it is so that it can't be in that, in its hiding anymore.
Yes, and that's such a good point you're making in that last thing that you said, right? Because part of the process of conditioning, which is what the article talks about, is that when we get bamboozled, we don't know we are bamboozled. We lose that ignorance includes ignorance of the process that we're not seeing, right? We're not aware of it. We think we are practicing awareness by talking about the voices. We are. And we don't know that we're not paying attention to everything other than the voices, life, how it is, all of those things, right? And so it's always a dance, and it's so helpful when a pattern gets recognized and when the guide points that pattern out. Because then now it's in conscious awareness and we can start to look at that pattern, which is the point really of the practice and where we are looking at in the article, that we're here to go, you know, use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so that we can drop that and end suffering. And we need to practice all three components of the of that one rule, right? Which is to notice it, use it, drop it, and go beyond it. And the way conditioning gets us stuck is to notice it so that we could put our attention on it, not necessarily use it to transform our consciousness through what we've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I feel like the piece of the article that was really so helpful for me, at least, that I was hearing in it was, so there's that place of just reporting on the voices, right? And we've really ferreted that out a lot over the last few years. So for a lot of folks, they get it. That's not what we're doing, right? But then that the next sort of move that conditioning seems to make is that, I love the way you laid it out in the article. I don't remember exactly how you did it, but basically, here's what I bring to guidance. Here's what's going on. This is what happened. Oh, it was this thing around getting talked out of meditation, right? And basically what happens is the practitioner brings the whole package to, quote, guidance, including kind of, and then I recorded and listened, and then it was, you know, and now I'm in unconditional love. And I just saw in that how that's such a perfect way for conditioning to block guidance. Because there's nothing to offer guidance on there.
That's right. What are you bringing to guidance? Yeah. It's like, I'm not suffering anymore, right?
Right. And then all there is okay, good. Well, gosh-o.
That's right. Exactly.
And I don't get to have the next place to look.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because you know, a skilled facilitator, if you bring that to the guide, will point out to you, so where is the next step? But there's a way in which if you did that for yourself, then there's a higher degree of calibrating to life, right?
Yes, yes.
And that question of, you know, we so often are not present to what it is we're saying. So if I say conditioning did something as a way of my opening statement to the facilitator, I don't know if that was conditioning. Was that conditioning? Mm. Was that life? Mm-hmm. What was it? Mm-hmm. What did it say? How did I know it was conditioned mind? If we assume we know, we don't know, because we're assuming. Yes.
Right, right, by definition.
And we're not aware we're assuming. And the whole point of practice is to keep going beyond assumption.
Uh-huh, yes, yes.
We want to limit inquiry, right?
We want to, exactly, exactly. That's what exactly what I was going to say. So it sounds like what you're pointing at is that we can train to be in that process all the time for ourselves. We're training to be in that process of inquiry.
Yeah, I think someone said it this morning on Project Joy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever want to get information from conditioned mind. Even so, it was, I think, with regard to agreeing with someone else's opinion. But even if I agree with someone else's opinion, if that agreement is coming, I want to know whether that agreement is a conditioned agreement or I'm really receiving that information, that alignment from life.
Right.
And so I might see the voices. Do I know that I see the voices? But until I'm really looking, I can't know that I didn't look to conditioned mind in order to assess that. Right? It's a very subtle way of paying attention.
Yes, it is. It is. And I think, you know, the point you make in the article is that the point of that, I mean, we won't ever know.
We won't ever know.
Was it the voices? Was it, you know, centered? Was it, I have no idea. But the point is not to get, is not to be in the inquiry so that I can get the answer. The point is the process of the inquiry. That's the whole point, is to be in that process.
Yes, and you know, Jen, I think the other pivotal place where we can bring it into conscious awareness is that place that was pointed at, which is if I'm repeating the process and I can describe it in practice language, it doesn't mean that I've transcended it. So I need to look some more, you know?
Yeah. I do
so, what is that? What is that? Mm-hmm. It's not sufficient to know how it happens, to explain how I think conditioning causes it to happen. I'm still stuck in looking at it, not looking at letting life transcend that, right?
Yeah.
And that's just the that's just the invitation. We get to stop at nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Other than ending suffering, right?
Yeah. So it's never finished. I think we talked about that with the Team 150K, the same exact principle. Why would we ever idealize getting finished with it? We're never finished. That's the fun of it, is being in the process. That is the fun of it, which is just quickly the other thing that I so appreciated when I read the article. I was right in the middle of, you know, kind of this and that, this thing going on. And it's a place where, gosh, when we come from that attitude of mind, I feel like you were describing in the article, it's such an invitation that everything is play. I don't have to be afraid that anything's going to happen, because everything that happens, you were talking about this in another context somewhere recently, I can't remember where, maybe probably on the radio show, but that everything that happens is sort of a mirror for me to look in and see what's going on. So I don't have to try to get to a place where everything's going well and I'm okay and I never get angry and I don't get frustrated, because all of it that happens is all a chance for me to see, to be in that process of inquiry that you're describing.
Yes. Well, and one last thing, because I know we're at the top of the hour, but, you know, if we're paying that close attention and we're not so interested in defining things, ego this or voices that or conditioning said or any of those things, I can actually, if I'm talking from what's going on for me, I'm actually in awareness, right? Awareness is describing what it's aware of. And that is such a rich, textured, yummy experience, right?
Yes.
Not to just abstract it into these monolithic words that are used by conditioned mind, but to live at that level of attention where the subtlety and energy and frequency, we develop a whole new vocabulary. And it's what's going on for this human being, for this life.
Yeah.
And to be able to develop the I think Aldous Huxley says, attention, love is a mode of knowledge, which is experienced through attention. So if I'm paying mm-hmm. attention and I can develop the ability to articulate my experience in all mm-hmm. of the technicolor detail that I'm experiencing it, there's so much more vitality in mm-hmm. our process than yeah. abstracting it.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
what we lose. We lose information, right? We lose the ability mm-hmm. to bring that to the mirror, mm-hmm. to see that in the mirror, and to have the mm-hmm. mirror, in terms of the wisdom of the guide or the facilitator, to actually work with that in a way that the labels,
exactly.
the labels at a superficial level yeah. don't give us the opportunity for.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well put. So well put. Yeah. Yes. Yep. Oh, my gosh. We could go on and on.
That we could.
But you're right.
We but I guess we could keep it. This is one of those things where we keep the conversation going because it's a framework,
yeah.
right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. When I read that, I just thought, okay, this is really good. This is a record it and keep it fresh, because that's it. Keep it fresh. That's the whole thing. It's trying to smooth it over and, you know, put it in the background. So yeah, thank you so much for that. That was, the article was fabulous, and thank you for being with us this evening to talk about it some more.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you, Aswini. Bye-bye. Take care. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Aswini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Feels like good evening or good night almost.
Yeah. Hey, I know you know this. I know you know this because... I know you know this. We are like 2 weeks, not even 2 weeks away from the shortest day of the year.
Yes.
And then the count begins. Days get longer.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm. yes. Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah, well, that was something, I think we could call that a breathtaking conversation, would you say?
Yes, yes. A lot of enthusiasm there. I could hear it.
Yes, and a lot of clarity and wisdom and places for us to look.
Yes, yes. And the sense I got was to really stay in that mind of I don't know, because as soon as, quote, I know, unquote, then I'm really in trouble, it seems like.
Yes. Yes, well, and that's how we know ego has taken over. The encouragement that I liked so much, I don't know exactly where this was in their conversation, but as long as we're hearing, getting any kind of information that I need to keep this to myself, you know, I don't want to bring this to group, or I don't want to bring this to guidance, or I don't want to, you know, because there's that, you know, kind of hiding out, and, you know, I'm not sure, and it could be embarrassing or difficult or painful or whatever it is, that we really are colluding with the very system that is robbing us of our lives. So moving into that, wow. Wonder what we're seeing. You know, okay, I've seen this. It's like a sort of a scavenger hunt, you know, and we get together
yes.
and we compare clues, and then we race off to the next, to find the next whatever it is. And when we, the whatever it is that we're racing off to find is freedom. So
yes.
we really do want to get all the clues we can get from every place we can get them. And remember, whose side we're on.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Are we on conditioning side, or are we on side of
yep.
this authentic human being?
Yep. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have some announcements?
I do. A couple of spots are still available in the New Year's retreat, December 27th through January 1st in Menlo Park, California. The retreat features meditation, group discussions, yoga, guidance with you, Sherry, and free time to spend in nature on beautiful, spacious grounds.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's true at this point, that there are a couple of slots. There may be one.
Okay.
Yeah. We've just about hit chock-a-block.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up to practice being present on a weekly basis. A new quarter begins January 15th.
Mm. It just doesn't seem possible to January 15th. All right.
Yes, exactly. And as I'm going to say now, for these and other opportunities in 2018,
yeah,
visit livingcompassion.org.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show to indicate that desire and by pressing *6 and then 1. And a 5-minute conversation focused on one topic is great. Okay, Sherry, you ready?
I'm ready. Yeah.
Okay. First caller, you are next. Live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Chrissy from Annapolis.
Hello, Chrissy.
Hi. I'm having that moment where I can't believe I actually made it on the call. So I listen to Project Joy and participate in that process, and it's just been so helpful on so many levels.
Good.
Just in thinking differently and bringing my attention away from my conditioned thoughts, just questioning, mm-hmm. like, why do you even mm-hmm. think that? But in
yeah.
a nice way, most of the time.
Yes, yes, in an interested way.
Right.
Right. Instead of a judgmental, just interested. Wow, that I never noticed that before. Huh.
Huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you and Michael and Ashwani, I mean, and everyone, it's just a really an amazing process. And I know for me, just with so much that's going on outside of Sangha, it's a refuge. You know, of sanity.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Sanity and kindness and, goodness.
Right. You know, because your words will come up in my mind now. You know, I also have a recording listening practice, and I'll commit right now that I'm going to join another program. I did the Enneagram email, and I've been thinking about doing a recording and listening class. My husband Art and I are talking about a retreat. So just in 2018, I think we'll make more another active commitment.
Good.
Do you think you'll...
That is the secret. Okay? That is the secret. Just to constantly make... So I'm doing this right now, and I'm committing to this. And it's not that we get terribly into the future, but so the next thing I'm going to commit to is that. And then after that, I'm going to commit to that so that I always have something that I'm doing that brings me back to practice. Because mm-hmm. without that, as you know, it doesn't take us long, a week, and we can just wander off down some track somewhere that we really don't want to wander into. And
right.
so just always, there's always something to bring me back. So do I think what?
Do.
Were you going to ask me about something in the future?
No, I guess I was just going to provide an example of the past of when it worked well. We were on our beach week vacation when we did the Enneagram class, and it was probably our best vacation ever because our attention wasn't focused on this has to be that and this has to be perfect and this has to be the vacation of a lifetime. And it was more about did I write it? Did I record it? Did I process it? Did you? You know, we were just in practice conversation.
Yes.
And it really simplified things.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're present, right? And
right.
That's a perfect example of the difference. We're either here, looking at here, talking about here, or we're off in where we're going to go to dinner tonight, and that place was kind of a disappointment, and that's really that, yeah.
Yeah. And our kids were all there, so they got to watch it. So that was sort of interesting, too.
Good role modeling.
Someday, some moments are better than others. Yeah. But fantastic. Will you do, I guess this is a future question. Will you do Project Joy next year, do you think, or something that is more a daily commitment?
We don't know. We don't know what we're going to do. Historically, and this is something we can put out to the Sangha, historically what happens is at one point I did a retreat on sexuality. I think Chris and I did it. And there were something like 72 people signed up or tried to. They didn't sign up because we have never been able to accommodate that many people. But it was just outrageous. We offered it again. Nobody signed up. And that has been my experience time and time and time again. We do something once, and everybody wants to do it, and then if it's repeated, no. Even if they haven't done it, that's kind of old news. The suspicion is that if we offered it again, their conditioning would come in with that. Yeah, but you've already done that, and it's like you could do other things, and that sort of thing. So we don't really know. I'm always in this place when we finish a year where I think, that's it. We've hit the pinnacle. We're never gonna top that. And then actually, it's Ashwini. Ashwini comes up with the next thing that we're gonna do that is just better than ever. So it's good. I don't know. The answer to your question is I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I'll accept that, as the way it is.
We want to live in I don't know, and this is a real example of this. I don't know. But by the time the year ends, we have the kickoff. I think it's around the 20th of January, somewhere around there. And so we'll be announcing what the year is. So there we are. Right now we're putting together the New Year's retreat, of course, and, finishing up the year with that. And of course, Project Joy goes on through whatever that is around the kickoff time, because we didn't start it until, 3/4 of the way through January last year. So then we'll see. It's very exciting.
It is exciting. And I'll just, share that it's just been so a wonderful refuge when every day we're getting bombarded by either conditioned mind or things outside of us. And so it's just been great to know that on a find new content, and I know where to go and I don't have to search very far. And so that's been a real pleasure. Yeah. So when you're thinking about it, just, it's been helpful to so many of us. So
yes. Well, I do think it's probably the single most powerful thing we've ever done in Sangha, as a Sangha. It's going to be fun to see.
Yeah. Well, thank you for everything.
You are so welcome.
You guys do. And thank you, Michael. And have a great evening.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Chrissy. And Sherry, I love that place of I don't know. and seeing how things are going to unfold. And will there be a radio show or not? It's really great to be informed by life and
yes.
to be open to see how that works.
Yeah. Well, and the part that I think I like best about it is what perfect proof it is that the intelligence animating all of this has way better ideas than we do. You know? And to have the faith and the trust and all of that, and to have had it proved often enough that it's possible to stay in that place and not need to worry about it a bit. You know, when the time comes, my favorite New Testament quote, you know, when the time comes, what you need will be given to you. And that is true. And we can have that proved to ourselves over and over and over if we're willing. We just stay, mm-hmm. stay present, and here it comes. It's
stay.
Never, it never fails us.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think of that line, wait for it, wait for it.
Here it comes.
Mm-hmm. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Emily from Seattle.
Hello, Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hi. Well, I'm just been feeling so much joy about being in the queue lately, and I'm looking back on, reflecting back on the year of Project Joy, and part of my decision about joining that retreat was I wanted to call into open air, but I was afraid, and I thought, well, I'll be able to get the practice, you know, every day, and so I just really can see that now over the year that where I've just gotten to this point where, oh, I'm excited. Here I am, like getting kind of a rush about it and just feeling, oh, just so much gratitude about the support and seeing that change, you know, it's really changed.
Yes. It, moving from a place where the voices can paralyze us with mm-hmm. several aspects of that, right? The just the fear of speaking, you know, which mm-hmm. is big for a lot of people. But the feeling of not belonging. You know, it's proof that you're kind of an outsider, and these other mm-hmm. there are these other people, and they're doing what they're doing, and you're not really a part of that. So what we moved through in choosing Sangha, right? Because Sangha can't mm-hmm. choose us; we have to choose Sangha. We moved past so many of those places of suffering that ego keeps people in. You're not isolated. You're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, you have this whole vast network of people who are doing the same thing that you're doing. You're contributing. They're contributing.
It's good.
And it applies everywhere, doesn't it? It applies everywhere. Yeah. That, because I know a little bit about what you do in the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So moving past that, oh, God, it's terrifying, to this is exciting. Same mm-hmm. content.
I can do this.
Right?
Yeah.
I can do this. This is exciting. That's why my heart's pounding like that. That's why my palms mm-hmm. are sweaty. Yeah, this is exciting. Really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I, you know, I just am really excited about a big bamboozle that I just saw through, like a lifetime one that had me caught, and it was about what I did determined my happiness. And I realized that I had been listening to ego about, looking to ego about what should I do. And, and you know, and it was talking to me in this way, like, you know, I'm going to help you find your heart's greatest desire. And you know, whatever idea you come up with, let's talk about it and make sure it's the best use of your time. And just, I just...
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah, a big one. Just like it seemed like it was helping me, like it was going to help me find my...
It's your pal.
Yeah, yeah, like talking in practice language and using what I loved to reason with me. And I just felt like I realized that and I was able to step out of it and get free of that.
Yeah, yeah, yes. That is such an important point. It'll use anything, right? It'll use anything, and we know that, yeah. That it'll torture us about anything. But to the way you've pointed out that flip side of it, which is it knows how to talk practice. It knows that that sometimes talking nicely to people accomplishes what yelling at them won't accomplish. The goal is the same, isn't it? Be in conversation with ego. Do what ego tells you to do, and just sense the setup in that, right? It's just positioning you to, once it pulls you in and gets you to believe that it's on your side, then what's really going on is going to become apparent.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very
good. Congratulations. Party time.
To see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
good.
Well,
all right. Celebrate.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Emily.
You know, in the email class, Michael, I was talking to somebody about I think it was evil coach ego. And the one Emily was just describing is kind of slimy or creepy.
Yes.
Coach ego, right? Just oozing its way into our good graces so that we're not going to expect it when the blow hits, when the blow lands.
It's a much more, I don't know if subtle is the right word, but using sort of flattery to get
yes.
where it's trying to go when the other approach is not working.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Yes.
It's a good tip.
Yes, good tip. And mm-hmm. we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Mark in Chicago.
Hello,
Hi,
Mark.
Hi. You know, I wanted to call in with a kind of a report on something that I had talked to Jen about last time I called in. This was a couple months ago. And that is I talked with her about my concerns with the doctor that I had and the fact that, you know, as I get older, kind of the healthcare thing becomes more important. And the basic issue was that I inherited this doctor when there was some changes in the practice, and she was really a very kind of right down the middle line on medical drugs, you know, pharmaceuticals, all this kind of traditional testing and everything. And I was really uncomfortable with that. I was actually kind of uncomfortable going to the doctor because I wasn't sure where that was going to end up. And one of the things we discussed was, well, maybe it's time to get a new doctor. And that's actually what happened. And the good part of the story is that it was an experience of life just kind of leading me to making a decision in sort of an effortless way. I had a tick bite, and we have Lyme and all that crazy stuff around
yeah.
here. So when it was a kind of tick that carries that, and I couldn't get it out. So I thought, you know, I kept saying to myself, I don't want to go to the doctor. She's going to just do the big antibiotic thing, or whoever knows what she's going to do. And I finally just said, you know, this is crazy. I'm not going there anymore. I'm just going to go to the urgent care place, and I'm going to get a new doctor. And that's what I did. I went, and the woman who pulled this tick out was just great. You know, she said, you know, you could take an antibiotic if you want. If you don't want to, if you're not comfortable, don't take it. And I thought, this is great. You know, this is exactly
right. And did she tell you what to watch for and all of those kind of gave you some information so you could be empowered?
Yeah. But she didn't try to make me. She didn't try to make me afraid, you know, that I have to do all kinds of things. And so the really good news about that is, you know, I mean, of course, I got a new doctor, but the really good news is it's one of the, it might be the only time where I can say with comfort and confidence that that was really a life thing that happened to me. You know, I didn't Google that. I didn't spend hours thinking about it. I didn't do anything. I just got a tick bite and said, you know, this is crazy. I'm getting a new doctor. And it just happened.
Mm-hmm. Feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, and the part of that, so it's interesting to watch what happened then, because the way conditioning came into that was, well, that's not really what happened. You've been unhappy with your doctor for a year, and you had to call and talk to Jen on open air. You couldn't even, you know, you couldn't make this decision on your own. And
wow.
And I just, you know, put all that behind me and said, look, I made the decision. I'm happy.
That's
with
right.
The decision.
That's right. Yes. That, and that's to me, intelligence in action, that expression that intuition needs experience. So it's not that we're going to just walk around on our own. And life it will always, well, it does actually, but we don't always have the ability to recognize what's talking to us. And so we get support. We talk about it. We get facilitated through it and we get to the place. And then when we're ready, the intelligence drops in and we're ready to act on it.
Yeah.
And just the way you describe that, Mark, it once again, I'm just stunned at how hateful that system is, and how obviously, hatefully useless it is. You know, anybody hearing you say that, nobody could believe that is talking to you for any good purpose. Just putting you down, trying to humiliate you, trying to make you feel bad, trying to make you feel inadequate. There's just nothing good in it.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, again, conditioning is good at using my own skills against me. So, I mean, by personality and by training, I analyze things over and over and over. And you know, if you're building something, that's a great skill to have. But when you're trying to, you know, make even a simple life decision, sometimes that can take you off onto journeys where it's not for
all the time. I would say, the time it can, yeah. And it doesn't mean that we don't want information, but everything. I think I can say this without getting into trouble. But everything in our lives has two possibilities, right? So you do want to be informed. We do. It's good to be curious and open and receive information. That's not the same as following conditioned mind off to noodle about something that is simply designed to take us out of the present. So somebody was, I think, again, it was in the email class, I can't remember, but somebody was talking about watching TV. And, of course, watching TV, that's the horrible, worst, awful, hideous thing that you can possibly do. Or is it? The point is, can you watch television and be aware? Can you be in awareness and watch television?
Yeah.
That's because we can go unconscious with anything, or we could be conscious with anything. And it's the being conscious that is the point, not correcting behaviors.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So if you use your the skills that you have of collecting information, making decisions, that sort of thing, that's great, as long as you're staying open to life dropping in
the next move to make.
Yeah, and so long as they don't let it paralyze me into doing nothing because I continue to analyze.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Good job.
Thanks very much. Thanks to Jen. Thanks to the program. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you, Mark. You too.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. Sherry, I really appreciated that conversation. And I especially liked the part about, I think he said the voices were sort of chastising him for, you know, turning to practice all the time. And,
yeah.
And I was thinking, well, of course, you can chastise me all you want about that because that's what I want to do is turn to practice for every decision.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, I love it when somebody, we can hear somebody articulate it in a way it's really clear. That is not, that voice is not trying to help me.
Yes. Yes.
You know, somebody saying in essence, you are such a loser. That person is not on your side. It's not trying to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one Emily was talking about, that's a little trickier. Right. Although
yeah.
All of them, when they're inside our head, they can sound just as real and valid and compelling and important. But it's when it's hateful, it's just I don't know. I think it can be.
Yeah.
Once we catch on to it, it can be easier to catch on to.
Yes. Yes. And it may have been in your conversation with Chrissy where you talked about the importance of being able to communicate and how people are scared of simply talking, period. And
mm-hmm.
as you say in this practice, we really have to put it out there to get any clarity about it.
Yes.
We have to learn to talk about it.
Yeah. And to realize that what stops us from talking about it is the very system that it is going to rule our lives until we get past that and begin to talk about it.
Yes.
Like it's embarrassing. Well, only ego gets embarrassed. You know, well, I'll get in trouble. Well, only ego is concerned about that. Well, people won't like me. Only ego is talking about that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah, good to see.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we are going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Oops, my apologies. I was muted.
Were you talking along?
Yes, I was.
I do that all the time. And then you wonder why nobody's responding, right? Yeah.
Yes. And we're back, and we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Vanessa from North Carolina.
Well, hello, Vanessa.
Hi. Wow, what a great show it's been so far. I I guess one of the things that I look at whenever I put myself in the queue is how much of my attention is on what is or is planning on what I'm going to say, and all mm-hmm. the great things that I've seen all day long, and I want to ask about them all, and then the moment arrives, and
gone.
They're gone. Yeah, they're gone.
Which is a really, really important thing to notice, isn't it? So they'll occupy my attention constantly. Okay, mm-hmm. this and this and this and this and this. And then when the moment comes, nothing. Yeah?
Right.
So what was the point of all of that?
Exactly,
well,
yeah.
To keep me out of the moment up until the moment when they disappear and I'm just left here.
Right. Right. Yeah, and that was actually one of the things that I was sort of looking at, actually, now that you say that, today is it does seem like lots of times I'll be, like I'll have listened to Project Joy or an open air or what made a recording, and all these things are like, oh, and this and this and this, and, well, how does that work and how does that work? And I think, I don't know, maybe a voice comes in and says, what's the point of all, like, it's very exciting, there's lots of energy with it, and so I want to kind of keep going and kind of look at it from this side and look at it from that side, but then a voice comes in or something says, well, is this, you know, how is this helping, is this getting you somewhere? Like, is this real? Or what do I do with that?
So, Vanessa, does it feel like, because, again, this could be one of two things, right? And I mean, generally speaking, everything is either one of two things. So
right.
What you're describing is you're right here and you're looking at something, and part of that looking is open to what you're seeing. So somebody was talking to me recently about reading and describing reading a line and then just sitting there,
mm-hmm.
waiting for what might arise as an insight about that or a response or just whatever came next. And so there's that approach. And then there's conditioned mind, where it's just leapfrogging around from thing to thing to thing, much like you're in the queue and, okay, you could talk about that or that. And there was that. You had that insight about that. You could talk about that. And it's a very, they can sound kind of similar, but they're coming from two very, very different places.
Mhm. Right. Right. And
in other words, the yeah. simplest way to say that is that you could be in a conversation with life or you're in a conversation with conditioned mind.
Right, right, exactly. And so I wonder, and so what would, how would I know the difference, I guess? I mean, I know when I'm sitting in the queue that that's conditioning, like trying to figure it out and, or whatever, it's not trying to figure it out. It's just trying to distract me from being here and telling me
yep.
a story that I have to be prepared and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But this other thing is, like it's really fun, and like I was and then I hear myself saying, well, I'm trying to figure out, and so then I'm like, really? That seems like a clue.
Uh-huh. Well, one of the things that occurs to me, of course, is you could do that on a recording.
Right.
And then you could listen to it and see if you could get a sense of where it comes from. I know for me, with my recordings, I have a lot of them that are labeled nattering. okay, where I'm just going along, just looking at whatever arises and saying it out loud, and then, you know, and it's a, it's kind of a process of inquiry, but not, it's without form, right? It's not actually going anywhere. But in that process, very often, insights will drop in. It's kind of a, it feels almost like priming a pump, you know, that getting started, getting the conversation started in that way, then I'm more open to the insights as they drop in.
Yeah.
But without the recording, it's really difficult. You just have nothing to compare it to.
And then
nobody else is listening.
Right, and I can see how I could just get lost in, you know, this, that, and the next thing, and then I'm not actually present or listening to life. I am trying to figure it out.
Yes.
Yeah. So to get it on the recorder, listen back, and then, I mean, one of the aspects is that I sort of wonder about is like, okay, well, it feels like, I think it was, I know I've heard you all say this, like there is no something or other without the change in, oh man, I'm missing a few keywords.
Yeah. You know, no change in consciousness without a change in behavior.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hey, you got there, right? I knew what you were talking about.
Right. So it's sort of like, well, what's the practical application of all this stuff? And I guess that's something I could definitely bring to the recorder and to the to the mentor into that conversation.
Yes.
Right.
And I suspect that that's what will remove any possibility that it is conditioning, just getting you to noodle around with it as a way of being out of the present and not getting any information that would alter anything. But when you introduce the recorder and the mentor into that, then now you're actually inviting a conversation with life.
That would give that information that might result in a change of behavior.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that could be the change of behavior that maintains a change in consciousness.
The recorder.
Okay. Yeah, because the change in consciousness I project is that you want to be in conversation with life. You don't want to be bamboozled by conditioned mind. You want to be here and be informed by intelligence. So that is a change in consciousness right there that we're in big danger of losing if we don't do something that keeps us in that expanded conversation, that life conversation.
Okay. And recording and listening is that thing?
Could be.
Okay. Or
yeah,
could be one of those things. Meditating might also be one of them.
Yes.
Like that.
And of course, I still, you know me, even a meditation practice, to me, without recording and listening, really gives ego the upper hand, because what it does is put conditioned mind in charge not only of the narrative, but also of the, and I don't know what the right word would be, but like the cataloging. So when we have a recording and listening practice, so you're meditating and you have a particular experience in meditation, maybe you see something. Maybe it's just you realize that when you're counting and you always become distracted at five, okay, and you notice that. If you don't record about that, the chances of being able to, in quotes, hold on to that insight are very small. But if you record about it, then each time you listen to that recording, you're going to be reminded to be aware of that. And as you come back to that, as you bring conscious awareness to that phenomenon, then you're there, you're present, you're looking, and the odds are good that the insight is going to come to you that's going to be the next step in that looking.
Hmm. Can you say that last little bit again? So you record that you've, and then because you've, and then you hold that, you're reminded of that insight.
Yes.
And then because you're reminded, then you are inviting the next step.
That's right. And so what will, yeah, I'm making this up, okay, obviously,
okay.
But something like this. So you'll be sitting there and you'll be counting along, and at 4, there will be an awareness that this is where you get distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And you start paying closer attention.
Mm-hmm.
And you have just kind of headed conditioning off its path.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Then you might actually be curious about, wow, so by just bringing conscious awareness to being distracted at 5, awareness drops in at 4 to pay closer attention. You record about that. And you get a few of those, and that's when you become a meditation addict. Okay?
Because right. What's going to happen next time? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But what you're doing, and that's why I'm not sure what the word is for that, but it's like you're compiling a body of information that helps you be expansive enough to receive whatever is the next piece for you. But if we don't, and again, if somebody comes up with a better one than recording and listening, I'm going to be the first one to sign on. But if you don't do that, then what conditioned mind can do is just have you stuck at the same level of awareness forever. Because you get to 5 and you get distracted. You
uh-huh.
get to 5 and you get distracted. You get to 5 and you get distracted. Pretty soon the voices are saying, you know, this isn't working. I mean, you've never gotten to 10 yet. What is the point of this?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that is a principle, by the way, that when we catch on to that one, you'll see it operating everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much, of course, what Jan and Ashwini started us off with this morning, with the Musings article. That's very much the point of that, that conditioning can keep us stuck at the
right.
same level for a lifetime. With recording and listening, if you're really diligent about cataloging or chronicling or whatever the word is, the insight, so that you're constantly coming back to, okay, yes, okay, I've seen this and this and this and this and this. All right, here I am. I'm aware of this. And what you're doing is inviting the intelligence to inform you. And as far as I can tell, there's nothing it wants to do more than inform us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think you just said to someone, intuition needs experience or something like that. That seems very similar.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's what we're doing. We're building the experience that intuition can land in.
Right.
And
right.
And everything just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
That's great. Okay. That's great.
You got it?
I feel like I have my assignment.
You got your assignment.
Or
all
whatever.
Right.
Yeah. More. Yeah, yeah. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
All right.
Good night.
Yes. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. Sherry, it's 5 minutes to the hour. I think we could fit a short conversation in if you're up to
that.
Oh,
let's try it.
Okay.
Could be Susan.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh my God, what a surprise, Isota here.
Hi, Isota.
Hi. What? I have a super quick question that just is perfect for 5 minutes. When you said that you have the recorders that you label as natter, do you then re-listen to those, or do you throw them away?
Oh, yes. Oh, I listen to them all the time. Because there's always something in it, right? So conditioning would have us believe that there are important moments and not important moments, okay? That things are significant and other things are not significant. But that's not true. And so very often, we can see as much from what conditioned mind would say is the boring as from the exciting.
And is there any what are the occasions in which instead you throw a recording away?
Actually, at this point, I don't throw them away. If I have heard one where it seemed like there was self-hate, where there was, you know, negativity or criticism or that sort of thing, I might delete that. But even if I come across a recording where I'm really, you know, kind of in the place we were talking about with Vanessa, you know, where I'm really looking at something, there's something going on, I'm not clear about it. And I might even be kind of in a about it, okay? I still keep those because one of the things that's fascinating to me about recording and listening is to listen to a time when something in particular was going on, when it's obvious that I don't know, right? I don't know. And then to have that recording and know what happened afterwards. Do you know what I mean?
I know, uh-huh.
Yeah. And for me, it really reinforces well-being with not knowing.
Okay, last question about this. But then if you ever instead listen to recordings just to feel comfort and inspiration, you make sure to skip those recordings or not?
Oh,
or you just keep them in the total shuffle?
Yeah, I just listen. And my recorder actually doesn't shuffle, but sometimes I'll get curious about like what was going on a year ago, that sort of thing. But generally speaking, I just listen. It's
fantastic. I have it super clear.
Yeah, it's just for me, it keeps me focused on practice. It keeps me focused on being here. And the way we were talking about with Vanessa, I can often hear things, like I'll hear something in a recording that I did 3 months ago that I certainly was not aware of when I first did it 3 months ago, even though probably I thought at that time that I got whatever it was. But the distance can sometimes offer a different clarity. And sometimes I just like listening to a happy person go around in the world.
And all your recordings are like this?
Not
most
all
of them,
them,
I imagine, yeah.
Not all of them. Well, I confess, they have a component of gratitude because whatever is going on, I'm grateful that it's going on.
Okay, the hour is the top of the hour. Next time I will ask you more clarification about that. But I will listen to recordings from a year ago, just as a test. Thank you so
much. Just for fun. Just see where she was in her practice a year ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very instructive.
Okay.
All right. Hey, Isolde, before you go, what time is it where you are?
Mm-hmm. It's 9 p.m. The end of a beautiful spring day.
9 p.m. at the end of a beautiful spring day. Oh, I love it. All right. Thank you. Enjoy.
Thank you so
Good
much.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Good
Bye-bye.
Night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Isolde. And Sherry, we've come to the end of another fabulous open air.
Yeah, it's great being with you. Thank you, Michael.
It's
Thank you, everybody.
You. Everybody else. Thank you, everybody.
Perfect.
Talk
Go
to
happy.
You next week. Go happy.